comic creators, artists, writers, world builders, this is your call to action. Here at Talking Comics, we love diving into the stories behind the story. Whether you're just starting out or you've been in the game for years, we want to hear your journey, your creative process, and what fuels your imagination. So, ready to talk comics with us? Message us or hit the link in our bio and be a guest on Talking Comics.
Welcome to Talking Comics. We got Will Allred with us. He is the writer of the crossover, right?
Crossover Division.
Crossover Division. I read issue one today. Well, I started to read two. I was getting intrigued. I will finish two later. Well, I'll probably finish the whole book, but I have the, you sent me the graphic novel one through four. Before we jump into all that, tell us about yourself.
Okay. Lifelong comic fan. I have taught English. I have a PhD in English. So I taught at a local community college at night as a second job for about 6 or 7 years. I kind of taken a sabbatical from that because day job plus night job leaves no time for writing jobs.
Right.
So I pulled back from that so I could start writing. I came to Kickstarter, I think, in 2018 with a book that I had done through the direct market called Diary of Night with artist Gene Gonzalez. I had a lot of fun doing it. It's a vampire book. But it went through the direct market many years ago. I had the art, so I said, you know, I'd really like a trade edition of this or a hardcover, right? Have all the art, so this ought to be easy. I'll just go to Kickstarter. I did not know. What I did not know about Kickstarter.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll dive into that. That's what everybody needs to know.
Yeah. I failed miserably. I hadn't built an audience. I mean, the point of crowdfunding is to bring a crowd, and I hadn't built a crowd yet. So after I, you know, laid in the corner in the fetal position and cried for a long time, I said, surely somebody knows how to do this and they can show me how. And I found Tyler James in Comics Tribe and Comics Launch. And I'm like, well, heck, this guy knows what he's talking about. So I went through the Comics Launch class, purchased the professional thing, whatever. And Tyler broke it down into small chunks so that even an idiot like me could make it work. So I came back to Kickstarter, I think this was about a year later, probably 2019, with the Diary of Night trade, and we funded. And then we did a quick make 100 where I did some signed versions of the hardcover and the trade, and that succeeded. But I had been working kind of in the background on a book called Crossover Division, which I'm an English nerd, a literature nerd, right? So among the other kinds of nerds that I am, but literature is kind of always, you know, something that I've, you know, been around all my life. So what I did was, basically the crux of Crossover Division is reality is fracturing. Our stories are becoming real, and only a English professor and a research librarian have the knowledge and the experience to save us all from an unhappy ending. So that's the pitch. Yay, right?
Right. Well, right, because I'm like, I read it and I'm like, wait, this is War of the Worlds. And I'm like, oh, it really is War of the Worlds.
It is
like,
War
this
of the
is
Worlds,
amazing.
Yeah.
And then I maybe did a sneak peek into issue two, and I'm like, oh, okay, see where we're going here.
Yep. Brides of Dracula.
Yeah.
No, it's fun. I mean, I wanted to, first off, the public domain is, I know a lot of people just treat it as something to mine, you know, hey, I'm going to get value out of this or whatever, but it's this hugely powerful bequest that we have from our ancestors and everybody that has lived before us, you know, all of these stories that matter, you know, to people that maybe haven't even ever read them. I mean, I can walk down the street and I can ask, you know, somebody, hey, have you ever read Frankenstein by Mary Shelley? No. But you know Frankenstein by Mary Shelley.
Right.
You've never read it, but you know it. We're soaked in this this culture that we've inherited. And I find that fascinating. And also, I kind of wanted to go back and look at some of these things and kind of see why, you know, why are these things part of our culture? Why have they endured for hundreds of years or even thousands of years, you know, and what's cool about it? What's neat? One thing I do in every issue of Crossover Division is there's an essay where I'm like, yes, I'm totally stealing from these people. Yes, I understand. I'm aware of that. Thank you. If you want to go find out more, here's where you can find out more about it. You know, go to your library, go to Project Gutenberg, download, you know, these as ebooks or the text of them and see just how cool they are. You know, I mean, War of the Worlds. H.G. Wells is, you know, the father of kind of modern science fiction, you know, and getting people to see some of his work, you know, as it was, I think is great, you know. And, you know, I can go up to people and say, have you ever read Dracula? Did you know it's an epistolary novel, you know, which is a novel told in, you know, letters to people? What? No, but they know Dracula, right? Right, everybody knows Dracula. Yeah. So that's kind of what excites me about Crossover Division. And Crossover Division is written. It's going to be a 20-issue series.
Wow.
Yeah, that's stupid. Yeah, that it's stupid and crazy.
It's crazy, but I mean, that's awesome that you have 20 issues, right?
Yeah, and those 20 issues are all written. Okay. We have art for issue 8 should be starting within hopefully the next several weeks. If I can find the time, which I need to, I'll probably have issue 9 starting around the same time. So, Crossover Division, let me back up a little bit. I talk about it a lot, but it's not just me. I've got an amazing team. So the artist for the first two issues was Pablo Martinena. He's an Argentinian artist. He is you know, wonderful to work with. The book looks beautiful, but he's not exactly a monthly guy. Not exactly like we're not exactly a monthly book anyway. So after those first two issues, when I kind of figured out that we weren't going to be getting, you know, I my goal, and I've not hit this goal yet, is ultimately to try to do one quarterly, right? But I've got to get on the right, you know, kind of TikTok with the two artists. And the second artist is Alice Leclerc. She's a French artist. So what we do is Pablo did 1 and 2, Alice did 3 and 4, Pablo did 5, Alice did 6. Pablo's doing 7 now, which is we're kickstarting right now. Alice will be doing 8. Pablo's on 9. And then we've already mapped out, it's not going to be quite alternating for the rest of the series. I let them kind of choose what issues that they were most drawn to, right? Because drawn to. Sorry, that's not a pun that I intended.
That was good.
But, I mean, we've got coming up, we've got Rime and the Ancient Mariner. We've got, let's see, I'm blanking now on, I've written them all and I don't remember any of them. We've got The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells coming up. We've got, what's the, I should have written this down, but oh, we have lots. So we've got, you know, 12 issues coming up. And the final issue, as written, it's going to be a 52-page kind of giant issue that both Pablo and Alice will be working on. Now, and besides them, we've got an amazing colorist, which is Ryan Kroboff. Ryan does a book with John Eddingfield for, what is the name of their company? Anyway, it's called Worst in Mayhem. It's funny. It's crazy. Ryan's a good friend. John's a good friend. And then we've got Brant Fowler, who does our lettering and design. So do I have one around here? I've got one somewhere around here. But our hardcover that we did. So we did the first 4 issues, and then we did a hardcover because I demanded it, actually. So I want a hardcover.
Right.
Wait a minute. I get to choose. So I chose to do a hardcover. And I crammed it full of as much background info and stuff as I could. There's pencil versions of some of the covers. There's inked versions. There's the Kickstarter project images. There's, you know, as much stuff as I could cram in. It's like a 200, I think it's over 200 page hardcover. And
well, I know the one document you sent me was 200 pages of the four. Is that the graphic novel?
Yeah, that's the one. That's the first four issues. Yeah.
All right.
So I will tell you this hard won knowledge. I said, guys, this is going to be an oversized hardcover. You know, it's going to be slightly larger, right? Well, Brant was like, well, crap, I got to reletter everything now. So we are now prepared so that he's lettering it, you know, the right way so he doesn't have to do it all at once when we get to the next hardcover, right? So,
gotcha. Okay.
Note to letterers out there.
Right. Know your medium.
Yeah.
And future mediums.
And future mediums, too. And then the final member of the team is James Powell, who's the editor. James is a great editor. He's also done some comics on Kickstarter. And I'm really blanking right now on the name of what he did. I've got them all in a stack here somewhere. But it's a great team effort for every issue, and it's just really cool making comics. I can't remember where I was reading it, but someone said there's probably nothing more punk rock, right, than making comics with the way the world is now, right? And I'm like, we're doing it. You're doing it too.
I am. It's crazy. I need the pointers on how to get the following. So
yeah,
you know. I did the whole Kickstarter pre-launch page. So that's out. It's that part's live, right? The pre-launch. I don't plan on actually launching the actual Kickstarter probably till like March or April, maybe April. My official release goal is no later than Memorial Day. So I'm committed to a convention in Traverse City, Michigan. And that's where the official release is going to be, I guess. It might release earlier, but if it does, it does. Great. But if not, the artist told me today, you know, he's thinking probably no later to mid-February to finish all the art. So I'm not rushing him. If it takes him another month, that's fine. Whatever it takes, it takes.
I love artists, but schedules and artists are an interesting thing.
They don't always jive.
Yeah. They don't always agree or mesh well.
He's been amazing, and he's having a blast doing it, which is, I'm so happy with the guy I'm using. His name's Mike Elgier. He's from Dork Art Comics. He wrote his own graphic novel and stuff. I had him on the podcast, and we kind of hit it off and just started messaging, and he did some fan art of, like, my little mascot, Panel Pete, and that's who the whole comic's based off of. I was like, dude, just do the whole thing. And he's like, all right.
All right, cool. Why not? Yeah.
And, you know, we're on pace. You know, I got five, like, he's on page five right now, so we're moving right along. So it's awesome.
We are beyond excited to share the Chronicles of Panel Pete, a brand new comic coming in early 2026. Written by Talking Comics podcast host AJ Ryman and co-written and illustrated by Mike Elgier, Dork Arts Comics. Panel P is a heartfelt comic about courage, imagination, and the hero within. Sure, he may stir up a little mischief, but at the end of the day, he's the hero we all need. Expect variant covers, exclusive merch, and much more. Follow the links in our bio, hit that Notify Me on launch on Kickstarter, and join us on this adventure.
Well, yeah, to your earlier question, bringing that crowd, right?
Right.
The most important thing, and if you go out and check like the first 10 episodes of the Comics Launch podcast, Tyler lays out a lot of really great stuff, and it's free. It's all free info out there. But building your own email list, like with MailChimp or Substack or letter or what a tiny letter or whatever they are, right? There's so many things out there.
Do you get the email list from Kickstarter?
Yeah. So what I do now, we can't add them unless they say, please add me. So what I do, we get a backer report, but I also use something called Backer Kit to do fulfillment because it makes shipping a lot easier for me. Actually, give me a second. I'm going to yell at the entire shipping department. That would be me, actually. Sorry. It makes it easier for me because it integrates with ShipStation. So I can just push orders into ShipStation and then I can print from ShipStation my labels and then, you know, send everything out. So the other thing that BackerKit does that I really like, and I think Kickstarter's finally starting to embrace some of the things that BackerKit has traditionally done. I'm on my ninth Kickstarter right now. 10th if you count the failed one. What BackerKit lets me do is it lets me send one email to all of those previous backers.
Oh, that's nice.
Which is very handy. Otherwise, I'm going to each campaign in Kickstarter and I'm selecting like and doing individually or doing an update. And just being able to do it in one place in BackerKit is so, it's not free, but I really do think it's...
I was about to say, BackerKit's like an add-on service, right? Like it's independent service that you can use.
Yep.
And they help with shipping too, right? And
fulfillment,
basically.
They help with fulfillment in that they put it all in. They send out the survey, or I send out a survey through them. The other big benefit besides that, that sending out the emails beforehand and during launch, that's called BackerKit launch. So that's one thing. I use them for the kind of the post fulfillment stuff where it lets me do what they call a pre-order store. So like for, Crossover Division number 6, still waiting to get it approved at the moment, but once it's approved, there'll be a link on the Kickstarter page for number 6 that sends you to BackerKit and you can go pre-order the book without having been a part of the Kickstarter, right?
Oh, wow.
And then I take all of that information and I start doing fulfillment, you know, once I get the books in, which for number 6 is hopefully going to be by the end of this month. So
awesome.
I'll be fulfilling. And then the current Kickstarter is for number 7, which will end on Halloween, which is, I think, pretty apropos because it's Cthulhu. And that's what number 7 is. We're crossing over with the mythos.
So go now, pause this episode, go back it, and then come right back.
Yeah, that's fun because I really get to play with all of these so well-known toys, right?
Right.
And that's what it is. It's playing. I mean, I get to play with these things. I'm not a huge horror fan. In general. So I take a more analytical approach, I think, to horror than somebody who's a fan of it because, you know, I'm not soaked in it like, you know, a fan would be. And I also try to bring that a little bit of an academic tilt to it. I'm, as far as Cthulhu goes, you know, I've read some of it. I do not like the author. The author was, I think, a hugely terrible human being, H.P. Lovecraft, based on everything that I've read about him. Okay. And that might color a little bit of what I'm doing in this issue, too. So you can check it out.
So I guess you didn't read the H.P. Lovecraft comic that came out last week.
No, I didn't. There was one. Okay, cool. I'm going to have to write that down.
I think I got it right. I do, actually. I read it the other day. So it's the last days of H.P. Lovecraft.
Wow.
It's going to be it's going to be, I think it's going to be like four issues.
Huh. I'll have to check that out. Awesome.
It was interesting. Well, and then I was thinking about, I was like, was it Lovecraft that wrote Cthulhu? Because I have this awesome game. Well, it's in the other room. I play a lot of board games too, and card games, but I have a Lovecraft love letter board card game that's like Cthulhu based. It's probably one of our favorite games that my group plays. So that's what intrigued me when I saw this. I was like, I have to get that to read about it. And it was interesting because it's basically talking about him dying, laying in bed about to die. So I've not read any of his stuff. I read a lot of comics. I have a goal of reading one a day, and I'm ahead this year.
Nice.
But as far as like novels, can't do it.
So that's one of the things that really kind of interested me in doing Crossover Division, is that I wanted to go back and reread them so that I could, you know, start being a bit more analytical. Part of the problem with me as a reader, though, is I'm an easy sell, because if I start reading it, I just start enjoying it, and the brain gets turned off. So I'm like, okay, wait, stop. I need to, yes, it's awesome. Stop. I need to analyze this. Okay.
Right.
But you know, doing that with War of the Worlds, doing that with, rereading Dracula, and the thing that kind of struck me about Dracula was just the mood that Stoker was able to create with letters between people. 'Cause there's no, this action's happening right now. You know, oh my goodness, this is a letter that somebody wrote to somebody else, so you know that they're going to survive. And still, you know, that mood, and there are, you know, like, well, wait a minute, what's going to happen now? You know, it's interesting how they're able to use the tools of a novel or a short story or whatever it is, or, you know, even poetry, to, you know, engender a response from the reader. And that's, I think that's really cool. As I go back and, you know, and reread a lot of this stuff, I was, you know, my favorite poem is Odysseus. I love the British Romantics. That's in my mind, that is the definition of what poetry is. And I'm sure a lot of people will throw, you know, that's the crap. No, it's what I love. Okay. I get it. It's what I love. Exactly. But I love Rime of the Ancient Mariner. You know, this is this epic poem that, you know, has influenced literature, you know, ever since. And I was like, okay, well, this is going to be something I love. We're going to cross over with that. We're going to see what that looks like. And it's going to look interesting. Another thing that I get to do that is just, besides working with Pablo and Alice, who, you know, are doing the heavy lifting on every issue, you know, the panel pages and the covers and stuff.
Right. It almost feels like I'm taking a back seat to my comic. Right.
Yeah.
The artist is doing
the hard work.
Right. I wrote the words, but like, it doesn't mean, I don't think it means as much as the actual artist. He's doing such a great job.
Yeah. And, you know, and my job is to tell the story to them so that they can tell the story visually to, you know, the readers. Right.
Right.
And that's just so cool to see, like, I think we should do a panel page with this. And, you know, Alice will come back and say, I think we need an extra panel here and this. I'm like, yeah, awesome.
Perfect. Well, literally after page one, I got page one back and I was like, okay, you're now the co-writer of this book. You haven't even finished page two or even looked at page two. You've read the script and you've done page one and you added like three words. And it made the page like 20 times better because of the art and the three words he added, right, that I didn't even think about adding in my script. And I'm like, you're now the co-writer. And he's like, okay, yeah, cool.
Okay. Yeah, it's so amazing because, you know, this is so much better than any of us could do on our own. But we're coming together and we're making this thing that, none of, you know, that together is better than any of us can make, you know, individually. Because I can't draw. If it's up to me, stick figure theater and bad stick figures at that. But the other thing I get to do, though, is with Kickstarter, one of the things that makes, I think, a difference is, now, and I try not to go crazy with this, is some variant covers, right? So you can get people to, you know, hey, well, okay, I don't, the standard cover, it's great and all, but I really like that first variant, or I like this. I usually do the standard cover and four variants, which
good number.
which is not just for the fans. It's also for me because I get to work with four other artists, which is awesome. And
I did do a variant cover myself. My mm-hmm. daughter's going to do a variant cover.
Nice.
The artist did the main cover and he even wants to do another variant. And so, okay, uh-huh. that's fine. But I love people that want to just do variants for me. I'll take 20. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's awesome. One of the things that I try to do since the second issue, is, if Pablo does the standard cover, if he's doing the intern, whoever does the, internal art gets the standard cover. And that means Alice would get the variant cover for number two, right? For number three, she did the interior. So, Pablo got the first variant. So we're always going to do that with Alice and Pablo.
That's cool.
But then I don't know if, are you familiar with, Jen St. Ange? She's an artist. She's worked with, Pat Shand a little bit on some of his, Space Between books.
I am trying hard to do a better job of not just reading the comic, but actually understanding who the author and who the writer, yeah. like who the writer, mm-hmm. who the artists are.
Artists are, yeah.
My daughter's doing a lot better than I am. She's like, well, I like this artist, so I need this cover. And I'm like,
yeah.
What? Okay. Oh, okay. You know, so I'm picking variant covers out based off art cover artists now. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
And
that works.
Yeah, she's a huge Scotty Young fan and David Nakayama fan, and which are cool. And they look awesome. And I'm trying to be better at that.
So Jen is, she's a fabulous artist. She actually did one of the variant covers for number two of Crossover Division. It's the greenish one with the Brides of Dracula kind of in your face. Which is, I love the cover. It's just, it's sassy and it's really cool. But I reached out to her not too long ago and I said, you know, would you be interested in doing a series? You know, maybe a series of covers where you're, you know, like the second variant or whatever. And she's like, sure. So we set up, if it works out with her schedule, she may be doing a variant for every issue moving forward, which that I think is going to be awesome. Which, she's turned in one, which for number 11 already, I think 10 or 11, which is, I'm horrible. I cannot remember the story we're crossing over. It's he gets revenge. It's got some pirates in it. God, I'm a horrible English person.
You're the English professor here. I'm just going to say I barely passed English class, literature class, my senior year of high school. Yeah.
I will think of it in a second.
We can pause. I can edit the dead space out. It's fine.
give me a second here. I will find out.
That's the joy of doing this, like, not live. Even when it's live, it's still fun. But I haven't done any lives really, but I need to start doing.
Let's see. It is, one of our, last issues is, the Divine Comedy. We're doing the Inferno, you know, by Dante, which is interesting because of plot developments that I won't spoil.
right.
But
now, I didn't get to read up issue two. I always say episode. Issue two. But while you're looking for that, is Crossover Division one universe or just hopping into different stories? Or is each one just individual?
So I set it up with the first, probably the first really 6-7 issues are, for the most part, standalone, right? So, okay. I mean, there's going to be some things that will kind of filter through, you know, as the characters, you know, move through the stories. Because I really wanted that kind of episodic, really, almost like the first, you know, to go to kind of a TV metaphor, those, the first bits of set up something that you know, will show that there's probably something else going on, a longer part of the story, but really just focus on episodic stuff for those first several issues. Once we hit number 8, it starts getting less episodic, and you're going to start seeing more of the underlying plot and what's going on in this world and why it's happening and what's going to need to be done about it. But I kind of really wanted to start out with just, you know, some kind of short episodes. 1 and 2 are single issue stories. 3 and 4 are actually, 3 ends on a cliffhanger. 4 wraps it up. Part of it is that they think they know what they're crossing over with, but they're wrong. And we see what kind of happens because of that and how they, you know, get out of it. 5 is standalone, but I've planted the seeds for some stuff that's, hey, why did they do this? What are they doing? Where did that come from? Right.
Right.
6 is, more standalone. It's with, the Island of Dr. Moreau. 5 is with, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So, The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, I think is the correct title. But let's see. I've got my list here. Okay. Yeah. Count of Monte Cristo. That was the book that I was thinking of. So that's actually number 9.
Okay.
Number 8 is going to be A Scandal in Bohemia, which is a Sherlock Holmes, which is, I had some fun with that. A Scandal in Bohemia is where they introduce the woman.
Okay.
Who is, you know, the only one to ever get a get one over on Sherlock, right?
That's funny.
So that's where we find out a lot more about Betsy, who's the crossover division agent that we meet in issues 3 and 4. So she's kind of, and she's an ex crossover division agent that everybody's afraid of, and we kind of see why eventually, especially in number 8. But 3 and 4 were the two gentlemen of Verona and Romeo and Juliet were kind of what we're dealing with there. And then, of course, number 7 is The Call of Cthulhu, you know, by Lovecraft.
That's the one that's in Kickstarter now, right? Number 7?
Right now, yeah. Now, I'm going to completely not surprise anybody here, I'm sure. I love, and I dearly, dearly love the John Carter of Mars books. That I just, they're so awesome. So we cross over with John Carter of Mars, I think in 15, okay. Which is going to be a lot of fun. It's, again, I get to play with these really, really cool toys that I've loved, or at least, you know, known of, you know, most of my life. And it's a lot of fun. I do have to get on to editing number 9 so Pablo can get started on it, drawing it. A cool thing. So I don't know if you know, Kevin Joseph is the writer of a book called Tart. And he and I did for the longest time, for about 2 years or so, we did a podcast called Explain Yourself, where we would bring on other Kickstarter creators and, you know, that had live campaigns, and we would, like, you know, explain the campaign, and we'll ask you questions, and hopefully you'll get some backers out of it, right?
Right.
But we're good friends, and we've actually written a Tart crossover division crossover that we're getting art back on now. We've got like almost half the pages done that are inked, and they're beautiful.
That's awesome.
The artist, Tina Valentino, she actually did a variant cover for number 3 for crossover division. But she is an amazing artist. And then, of course, Ryan Kroboth is going to be coloring it for us. And then we're using Kevin's letterer. And I am completely blanking on his name right now because I spent too much time on the road today, but, it's hopefully, I think we're looking maybe early next year to launch that on Kickstarter, but the art is absolutely gorgeous. Tina's an amazing artist, and the the book is just, it's so much fun because there are things I love about Tart and Kevin's book. And, you know, he sees things in Crossover Division and Hank and Hector that, you know, I don't see because I'm too close. And it was just so much fun to write it together. Cause he would write like three pages, then I would write three pages and, you know, we would, you know, check them over and, you know, see, does this okay? Does this sound all right? Does this sound like Hank or does this sound like Tart? You know? And it just, for me, Kevin is a great writer, but he writes so differently than I do. It was so much fun and interesting for me to see how he approached a page versus how I do it, right? Which I come at it really very structured. My formatting is structured and everything. And Kevin is more
like a professor.
Yeah, probably. And Kevin comes at it more as, you know, like a letter to his artist, like, this is what I'm thinking, you know, and this, and I'm like, it's so good, but it's so different than the way I approach it. And I just found it fascinating to see how he did it and, you know, to steal good stuff from him. Totally. Right. I never thought of doing something like that. I'm totally stealing that, Kevin. He's like, yeah, whatever. It's no big deal.
What was your, other than like the stories, right? The fictional, you know, the classic story. What was your inspiration for this book?
Well,
or for this series, I should say.
There's two. I wrote my dissertation, and they gave me a degree for it, suckers. I wrote my dissertation on Warren Ellis and whether or not his work should be considered modern or postmodern. Or the boring first half of the dissertation is, but then I start talking about comics, which really, that's when it gets fun. But Planetary, Warren Ellis's Planetary is a huge influence on specifically Crossover Division. There is one issue where in Planetary where they develop a fictional reality and then they send people to that reality. And that just got me thinking, well, oh, this is something I can play with. And then I was out running one day, and I say running because I'm old and weak, but this image, and this is a really, really dark image. This is not what Crossover Division is about, but this initial image hit me. I'm like, I can work with that. But I imagined someone like Agent K, you know, from Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, old, tired, sitting like on a curb or something, just kind of covered in blood. And the thought that came to my mind was that image with him saying, a man can only gut black beauty so many times. So, like, that's dark. That's really, really dark. But that got me the idea of, well, what if these stories were becoming real and they had to go kill them or something, which is not what happens in the series. But that kind of gave me that germ of, well, what if stories are crossing over? What does that mean? You know, what does that mean for reality? What does that mean for our characters? How do they approach it? Because when the series starts off, Hank is in a really dark place, right? He is depressed. He's, I think he even says to the girlfriend that's kind of kicking him out, right? She's worried about him, but she can't help him. They've broken up and he's like, you know, something's missing. He doesn't know what it is, but something's not right. And he's depressed. And then the War of the Worlds happens, kind of.
Kind of, yeah.
And he gets brought into Crossover Division. So part of that, his journey is finding out what's missing. And we find out who is missing. We find out pretty soon who that is. And we also, then that, you know, begs the question, well, what does that mean? What's really going on? And hopefully I'm doing a good job setting up that mystery and so that when we get to the end of the book, that yes, the individual issues work as a standalone issue, but if you read the whole thing, you're going to start seeing, you know, where, you know, we're starting to build things up, you know, to the finale. So, the advice that Kevin and I, when we had our show, we would always say is, his was going to be a 36 issue series, actually, or 70 something. Don't be like us. Do an 8-page story, do a single issue. Don't say I'm going to do a 20-page, you know, series or a 20-issue series, because that's nuts. And
yeah, I'm doing 20-page issue one. I do have an idea for. Oh, can you not hear me? Seriously?
Whoops, hang on a second. Something just popped up on my side.
Usually it tells me.
There, yeah. I can hear you now. That was okay. Weird.
Yeah, that was weird, because usually it tells me if the guest has an issue. But no, I was saying I am writing a 20-page. I got 20 pages comic.
You're a much smarter man than I am.
I do have an idea for another issue, but I similar to you, I'm trying to do, I want this to be kind of be a standalone. Mm-hmm. Each issue is like a standalone issue, or one shot, I guess you'd say. But the next issue is going to be like the origin story.
Nice.
So that'll be interesting.
Okay. And I need to prep you for something.
Okay.
You're about to enter a whole new world of nerddom, because you're going to care about paperweight real soon, and gloss versus no gloss.
Yeah. Well, funny enough, I've been in publishing for a long time. I used to publish books for people.
Nice.
I used to print and bind and trim and cut them myself.
Nice.
Back in 2009, 10 timeframe. So I did that for a few years, and then Amazon came along with their printing, and I didn't have to print and bind anymore.
Gotcha.
Because it was reasonably priced. Because I'm playing with like cover weight and stuff right now. Do I want all the pages to be the same, or do I want a thicker front cover? Do I want this? Do I want, you know?
Yeah. So I go with a heavier glossy cover.
Yep.
Like on this one.
Okay.
And so like I said, it's a whole new level of nerddom for me. I love the weight of it, because the stories are typically 24 pages, and then I add in like, you know, the variant covers, so they each get a page, and, you know, put some, you know, the essay that I throw in there. But I treat, and this is something that, you know, in talking with other Kickstarter creators, is this is Kickstarter's a premium, right? So I try to make sure that the book is as premium as I can make it, right? So I try to make sure that I've got that, you know, glossy cover on it. The paper weight's a little bit heavier, and you can feel it. And like, you know, we had mentioned earlier, I will sometimes grab, you know, one of the issues and just kind of hold it in my hand and said, this started in my brain.
Yeah, I can't wait to actually get some stuff printed. That's going to be fun. We have four or five covers done at the moment, and I'm going to get, two of them are blank covers, so that don't really count. But I'm going to get some prints of those in soon, and that's going to be cool. But I also am trying to keep the price very reasonable. So I think, like, my cover price is going to be $7. I think that's very fair for an indie published book.
Oh yeah,
you know, some people are doing $15, and I'm like, I cannot. I don't care. Like, I cannot do that. Like, I can't sell a comic book for $15. I think $7's fair, and I've got my printer, you know, to where I can make that work, even with Kickstarter taking fee and all that stuff. I can make $7 work, so I'm happy with that. What do you sell yours for? What do they retail?
Well, the about 15, actually. between what I pay the artists, so I'm trying to pay them, and we're doing 24 pages per issue.
Right.
Plus what I pay the colorist and a letterer, and then the printing on top of that, that's about break even for what I do. And I'm not doing 1,000 copies. I'm not doing, I'm doing around 400 copies, maybe 500. In some
places. It would definitely change if I only did 200 copies, right? Like ordering 1,000 copies of this thing.
There you go. So
I wanted to make sure I had, I could get it to where I could go to conventions, sell it cheap, or even cheaper, right? So like we started touching on this, I think, before we hit record. We had to realize, like, if I'm going to a convention, I don't have real much to sell as a podcast, right? But getting that person to like, in my Instagram or subscribe to YouTube, that's a sale for a podcast, right? In reality. And wrapping my head around that's been hard, because I'm used to the convention scene where I'm selling products and paying my booth fee, right? Recouping my booth fee.
It's not just that. If you're at a booth and you can collect an email address, that's somebody that can be on your email list, right? I know MailChimp has a MailChimp's what I use for my weekly podcast, my weekly newsletter. It's called the Midnight
Hour.
I need
to do a better job. I do not have a setup to retrieve email addresses. I need to work on that.
Yeah. And it makes a big difference because that's the crowd that you're bringing. And then that helps with, the almighty algorithm when you launch on Kickstarter and all of those things. So Kickstarter's actually changed since I've been on the platform. And part of it, I think, is due to COVID. So I originally launched Crossover Division number 1 back in 2020 when comic companies were shut down, distribution was shut down. Stores were shut down. The world was a mess. But it was this wonderful time on Kickstarter for comics because that's the only place you could go for comics was Kickstarter. So, I saw a lot of growth, but, 1, 2, 3, 4. I think right now, because, again, outside world stuff, different outside world stuff. The economy potentially being, something that people's worried about. I still think Kickstarter's a great place, but I don't think people are quite as free with their dollars on Kickstarter as they have been in the past.
Right.
And it's completely understandable. It just means that I have to work harder from a promotion standpoint, and make sure that I'm getting the message out. Because I feel like, and if I didn't feel this way, somebody should slap me and say, you've got to be confident, right? I feel like if you come to the page and you look at it, we've got an 8-page story that's a preview that you can download or read. And we've got a preview of the current issue. If that doesn't get you, to back digital or back, physical, then I've done everything I can do, right? So if I can get you there, I'm confident that Pablo's art, Alice's art, our variant cover artists are going to, make you want to, support us at some level, right? And that's, I think, having that email list, having backer kit launched so that I can email the previous backers, which, as a first time creator on Kickstarter, you won't necessarily have that.
Right.
But one of the things that you can do, and one of the things that you'll see when you check out the Comics Lot podcast by Tyler, is that, if you say, hey, here's a 4-page or 6-page preview. Here, if you want, here's a 6-page preview of the book. Would you like to sign up for my mailing list? And I'll give you the 6-page preview, right? That's how you can start building
that
list
out,
right? That's how you do it. And this is, I'm going to back up here and put on, the totally, totally honest truth thing here. I am not a marketer. I don't claim to be a marketer. I am not good at it. I just want to write comics, right? So Going through that class with Tyler and you know, showing how those things can be broken down, I understand what I need to do, but I also know that my time is probably better spent at things that I'm better at. So it's a person, a member of the team that I forgot to mention, Blake Morgan of Blake's Buzz. He is handling a lot of the promotion for us. And that's something that I'm like, dude, you tell me when you want me to post and tell me what to post, and I'll do exactly what you say, because you're the expert. I'm not.
You need to put me in contact. He needs to be on the podcast. He needs to share this with the world.
Blake's Buzz, Blake Morgan. I will make a note. But he helps. He thinks about these things. He helps schedule, any podcasts that he's, wants to put me on or anything like that. And it's just nice to know that he's there worrying about that stuff so I can focus on, the day-to-day stuff of the Kickstarter or editing issue 9 or, talking with cover artists for issues, 10 and 11 or, things like that. I am a big believer in that we should lean into our strengths. And that's why I've surrounded myself with all these really awesome people that make me look so good.
Right. Well, I've always, been very entrepreneurial, but I've always done everything by myself. Like, I have to do it myself. Everything, I have to do it myself. I started my store myself. I did all this stuff myself. And I'd bring on some people here and there to help me with some things, but at the end of the day, I always wanted to do everything myself. And when I got the idea to write a comic, I was like, man, a couple people told me you should write a comic, whatever. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to write one, but my art, I can't draw. I'm a graphic designer. I can do some graphic stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not an official graphic designer, but I mean, I know graphic design enough to do it. And I do it for the podcast and work stuff and everything else. But I'm like, I am nowhere near like the level to be able to produce a comic book. And I'm like, it's going to take me 10 years to write a comic book, to produce a comic book. And I finally was like, I'm interviewing all these, these artists and creators and writers. And I'm like, why can't I just hire an artist?
There you go.
Right. So I finally relinquished something, right? I can hire an artist. And it worked. And the book's going to be 20 times better, 100,000 times better because of it. And
And that's that synergy that we get working with other people that I think is just so cool, especially with comics. One of the things that when Kevin and I were talking on Explain Yourself, or we're talking to, other creators, or even when I was been at conventions and, doing a panel on Kickstarter or on, indie comics or something like that, it's like, please write comics. Everybody out, anybody could do it. This is not brain rocket surgery, I like to say. We need all the voices out there. So make comics. And comics are not hard. You just have to not stop.
Right.
Just keep doing it. That's all it takes. It's like anything. If you just keep doing it, pretty soon you'll be done. And then you can keep doing it some more, right?
I mean, that's right. I got to do this. I got to get through this one. I'm trying not. I don't know. I need to write the script for issue 2. One day, or issue 4. One guy told me I should just say the next issue is number 4. And they'd be like, "Well, just 2 and 3.
Mess with collectors, yeah,
right. Exactly. Mess with them. That's the end goal here. No. So, what advice would you give? I mean, you just kind of did it, but what advice would you give, like writers, or what's something you wish you would have known that you'd share with others now?
I think start small. That is the best advice. You can do a comic that's a one pager, right? I mean, there you go. You have panels, you have, sequential art. You have a comic, right? If you are newer to comics, and you think they're cool because they are, right? one of the things that I actually taught in, this is funny too. So I taught English at a local community college, and every so often they would let me teach a comics class, like every two semesters or something, they would let me teach a comics class. And cool. I was like, suckers. but one of the books that I taught, the first book I taught was Understanding Comics by Scott McCloud, because there's so much in there about the mechanics of how comics work, why they work, how you can make them work for you. It was, when it came out, I think it came out in 92 or 93, but when it came out, it was this kind of size. I mean, of course, there's Will Eisner's comics and graphic novels, or comics and sequential art, sorry, from, I think it was the late 70s, early 80s, which is good. I mean, Eisner is Eisner, right? But
I mean, they have an award named after him.
Yeah, so. Exactly. but McCloud's Understanding Comics itself being a comic, I mean, it's just this giant 208 page graphic novel where he explains comics as a comic. I mean, it's just like, okay, mind blown.
I'm going to check that out.
But it's so good because it really gets at, you know, the magic of comics. There's a chapter in there. He calls it Blood in the Gutters, which is, I love it. But the magic of comics, you have a panel here and a panel here. The magic is in that gutter where we create a sequence. Like we get, he has a stick figure of all things of like Abraham Lincoln with a big stovepipe hat, where he's got the hat on here and he's got it off here. We created that as the reader, that sequence, right? And it's just, I will go back to comics and sequential art every so often just to go back through and reread it, because it's such an amazing work. You know, even 33 years later, gosh, I'm old.
You and me both, buddy.
Yeah. Some days I feel it.
Yeah, I got a 24-year-old kid. That makes me feel really old sometimes.
Yeah, I have two 29-year-olds, so.
Got it.
Identical twin boys.
Oh, lucky you. I have a 24 and a 10-year-old, so I'm moving right along here.
Yep.
Yeah. go ahead.
But other than start small, just don't stop. Don't let anybody tell you can't do it, because you can. You really can. And I say this and people think I'm just being falsely modest or whatever, but if I can do it, anybody can do it. This is not rocket science, okay?
The same thing, because I was never good at English. I was never good at, I hated reading as a kid. You know, I never read as an adult. Occasionally, a comic book. I've read more this year than I probably have combined my whole life. And reading 300 comic books, right? This year. You know, I read a few here and there, but my daughter discovering comics, her reading level has gone through the roof. My reading level is probably amazing now, or much better now. I want to say amazing, but
yeah, I mean, that's how I learned to read, was, you know, reading. I'm a huge Green Lantern fan.
I was going to ask that in a few minutes, who your favorite was, and I pretty much already knew the answer.
Well, actually, this guy's my favorite. Marvel's Quasar. I love Quasar. That series by Mark Gruenwald is just, it's so amazing, and especially the Cosmos and Collision, which is the 19 through 25. It's just, I love that series so much. Close second is Green Lantern. I mean, I remember one of my earliest memories of comics is getting, I think it's 113, of Green Lantern, like off the stand. I must have been like 4 years old, 5 years old. I remember getting that off of a newsstand and reading. I think I still have it here. And it ended That's on a awesome. Cliffhanger. He was falling out of a plane and his ring was gone and he was going to die. And I never got to read it until like 20 years later. But anyway.
yeah. That was my problem with comics when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have a comic shop, right?
Yeah, I didn't either.
And the newsstands didn't have the same issues every month.
Exactly.
So small town, small, you know, I'd get pick of the litter of, you know, something and I'd pick one up and be like, oh, this is awesome. And I'd go look for it and it just
would be gone.
Make me mad.
So I quit reading them. Long ago and far away in this great land we call the 80s, I actually subscribed to like the Avengers from Marvel. That's so awesome. Every month I got it sent and it was in a cheap plastic bag. I beat the heck out of it when, you know, it came to the mail, but I got my Avengers every month and I would, you know, sit down and read it.
I love like some of these old, I'm a Thor fan now, but
yeah,
looking through these and then seeing like the subscription tear outs in them are so awesome. Like I could have got this for 50 cents or 12 cents a month.
I will always love Walter Simonson's Thor. That book has stayed with me for decades. It's just so great with his art and the story is, I love it.
I haven't got to read it yet. I'm slowly working my way through the journey into mystery.
Kirby. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're in the Kirby era.
I think I'm at like 98 right now. Mm-hmm. I think is where I'm at. I don't own them all, but I'm getting like the Masterwork books, a little smaller Masterwork books, to actually read them. The oldest one I got this is an actual Journey into Mystery 109.
Oh, wow.
Which is the oldest book I have, but I got this and then that's number 127. The actual The Mighty Thor 127, which is funny because somebody got me that poster like 2 weeks later, which is the same cover of this, like after I got this. Because it turned after Journey into Mystery at 126, it turns into The Mighty Thor, and this is 127.
Nice.
I found those two cheap, but they're beat up, but I don't really care.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. I mean, and that's one of the things that I'm slowly working, filling in Green Lantern, because there have been times where I didn't get it for whatever reason. We moved so I didn't do comics. I didn't purchase new comics at a shop for a while and all those things. But now I really do want to go back and start at some point and just read from the beginning. Right. Read all.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Trying to do it. It's slow, but I count them as my, you know, one per day towards my one per day. Even in the graphic novel, I just mark them off as read, but individually. But yeah, I would love to get to read all of them. I think 115 of the series of the run, but it's like, what, 126 to 502, so that's all.
There you
375
go.
Books. Yeah, so I'm exactly. A third of the way there.
Yeah.
So I got a while before I actually finish. You know, I'd love to finish it in the journeys, but some of those journeys are expensive.
Oh yeah, they do get expensive.
Unless you find them like this, you know, like they're cheap.
Yeah,
but love, and I wouldn't care. You know,
yeah, those books have been loved.
Right.
So
I got one the other day. It was like an early. Hold on. I think it's one of the first ones here. Yeah, there it is. So it's 138.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever had this, like, took a pen and outlined Thor. Like, it really wasn't supposed to be that way. Right? Okay, they took a pen and outlined him in ink pen. Right? It's hard to see.
Yeah. There,
you can see it now, like, on his boots.
Yeah.
But somebody, you know, whoever owned this did that. Some kid did that. Uh-huh. And I was like, it's worth it. That's a one-on-one right there. I'm keeping it. I'm getting it. So I'll slowly and surely fill it in.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this has been awesome. This is, you've got a lot of cool insight. We're going to go into that the Comic Launch podcast. I'm going to figure that out. Who? It, what was his name?
C-O-M-I-X launch.
X. Okay. Yeah. What was his name?
Tyler James. He's actually trained a lot of successful Kickstarter creators. And it is, again, I was coming out of the fetal position because of the first failure. Right. And he showed me that I could do it and showed me how to do it.
How to do it.
So far, knock on wood, things have been going well. And
you know, what's your number one Kickstarter advice? Build the audience.
Build your crowd to bring there, because then you have to treat it. And Tyler, I'm parroting things Tyler says. So this is not right. Will's genius at work here, because there is no genius here. But make it an event. And that's something I actually struggle with, because every issue is an event. Trying to do that is, again, it's kind of outside my comfort zone from, you know, that marketing standpoint.
Right.
I mean, it really works for the Comics Tribe, which is Tyler's company. And, you know, a lot of the creators that have gone through there. In fact, one of the things that I think really helped me by joining Comics Launch, I found my tribe, for lack of a better point, because I wasn't alone anymore. I had people that I could ask questions and they could ask me questions. Although if they were smart, they wouldn't ask me questions. But I found a group of people that, you know, I could, you know, talk with and, you know, and share things with, because, you know, you talk about small town. I grew up in small town Arkansas. I live in Fayetteville, Arkansas right now, which is not exactly big town, but it's...
I know exactly where that's at.
Yeah. So finding that group of people that, you know, that will support you and help you get to your goals that was so helpful to me, because it did make me realize that I wasn't alone out here, and I didn't have to do this on my own. I didn't have to figure it all out on my own. Somebody had already figured it out, and you know, I could ask questions and I would get help. One of the things, honestly, that kind of made the pandemic a lot more bearable was a group of creators. We would get together every week on Zoom and we would just talk about stuff. It wouldn't necessarily be comics. I mean, comics would come up, but we would chat, and that group still exists. I mean, we chat via Facebook Messenger, you know, almost every day. You know, somebody will say, "Hey, what's this?" And I'm like, "Well, I did this stupid thing today," or, you know, something like that. But it's really awesome. And, you know, the members of this group, I can, you know, cheer them on, because good friends, Kat Kalamia, Comic Uno on, she does some reviews and stuff. Kat Kalamia and Phil Falco are just these launching machines. They've built a huge audience and they launch a lot of books. And it's awesome for me to see. And I cheer them on because they're doing some great stuff. And then of course, you know, when I launch, they're going to cheer me on and, you know, hey, you know, and check this book out. Their audience is way larger than mine, but that's okay.
We'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there. So yeah, it's finding the thing that was most important to me, I think, was finding my group of people and not, you know, being alone.
This has been truly a great community to be a part of, like on TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah.
And like everybody, you see the same people, right? You know, and you're getting to know them. And, you know, I hope I'm part of that, right? Getting to know these people and they're getting to know me. And I've gotten a lot of good comments, you know, just what I'm trying to do is, like, I'm not really asking for anything. I'm just wanting to help and talk to people and put it out there and see what happens. You know, eventually I'll ask you for your email address now.
That's right.
Getting and backing my $7 comic book in a few months.
There you go. That's right.
For right now, I'm not really asking for anything.
No, but and you're great. You're absolutely right. The indie comic community is so supportive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and they show up. We want everybody to succeed. We really, really do.
We're all in this together.
Exactly. And you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. That's why, you know, I've seen criticisms of Kickstarter, you know, oh, they're bringing a book by big name, you know, Keanu Reeves, for instance, you know, what was that book? It's not a zero sum game. He brought more people to Kickstarter. That means those more people saw other projects and backed the project. The Brandon Sanderson book, his was a gigantic influence because he brought so many backers to Kickstarter, and those backers in turn, as new backers, backed all these other projects, right?
Yep.
So it's,
I never thought of it that way until you just said it, because that used to make me mad too. Mm-hmm. Back in the day when I ran my game store, like these big name publishers.
Exactly.
Didn't have any, in my opinion, had no business being on Kickstarter. I was like, why are they doing this? What are they getting out of this? But it's the zero risk game for them, because they're getting all the funding up front. But then what they're doing for the community, they're bringing new people in. So when we go to Kickstarter, those people are there now.
Now, but you know, and all this
took me 10 years to bring that full circle.
Well, but all this great support from the indie comics community, and then you have the Kickstarter comics community. I mean, there's a lot of crossover for there.
Right.
But if I remember correctly, and I think this was reported by Tyler at one point, is that comics is the most successful category on Kickstarter. So I feel like a 72% success rate. Which is insane, because nothing else approaches that on Kickstarter. And it's because the Kickstarter community, as well as the indie comics community, have made it, you know, such a great resource for us indie comics creators. We know we can go there, and we know that there's going to be support for us. And it's amazing. I am still shocked at how welcoming the indie comics community is. I mean, even today, and I'm supposedly an indie comics creator, I guess, for a while now. I don't know.
Right. A few years now.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm 6 months into this journey. So I appreciate, you know, and that's, I feel, you know, it's weird, but I still, you know, I'm very small, but I really appreciate, you know, everybody that wants to be on, and yourself. And, you know, I think I messaged you through Kickstarter a couple months ago.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's how we met. And then I got banned from Kickstarter because of that. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know that.
So I think you were
sorry.
No, you're fine. It was my mistake. And once I appealed it, they were like, okay, you're good. Yeah. But they have a bunch of spam filters, I guess. And
Yeah.
You know, when you're a podcast and you want to get guests, and you're like, okay, so I messaged you, and I messaged the next guy, and I messaged the next guy, and by the fourth one or fifth one, they're like, yeah, we're locking your account. And
I'm
like,
wait a minute.
What are you doing? You're like, you can't solicit. I was like, well, I'm not soliciting. I'm not trying to sell you something. I'm trying to promote
your book. Yeah.
And exactly. They, you know, I'm trying to get them as guests on the podcast, you know, and they locked my account down. I mean, it was, you know, they locked everything. I couldn't access anything. So if you had messaged me, because I'd given you my email.
Yeah.
Luckily, you emailed me, because I couldn't get into anything to contact you. And I appealed it, and I was like, they sent me this nasty email, and I responded. I'm like, hey, that is not what I was trying to do. I was just trying to reach out to people to see if I could get them on the podcast to promote their work. And they emailed back. They're like, okay, just don't do it that much. I'm like, hey, I'll quit doing it now. I'm not going to do it again. Just unlock my account. So this is my one and only reach out through Kickstarter podcast. So
I'm glad it worked.
Now I just reach out through socials and, you know, go that route.
Gotcha.
Or they reach out to me, and that's fine. But I was like, really? I was like, I just started this, and now they're going to ban me from Kickstarter. But they approved my page, so I was super happy about that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
They pre-approved it. You know, the pre-launch page is up there. So it's a crossover division number 7, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And if you go to crossoverdivision.com /Kickstarter or /KS, either one will take you to that Kickstarter.
All right, I'll put that in the show notes. I've got a few more just fun questions for you, but
fire away.
Before that, is there anything that we haven't talked about that we need to talk about or you want to talk about? Or I just like giving guests the opportunity to be like, dang, I really wish you would have asked me this. Like, I really need to talk about this, right? If there's anything out there that you want us, this is your open forum section, I guess you'd say.
We've kind of, like my normal ADHD brain, we've kind of gone all over everything.
Yeah.
So I can't really think of anything right now. Well, I do one thing.
Okay.
And this took me a while to kind of get my mind around. You're a comics writer, all right?
Okay.
If you are. So. No, I know, but you
it's
are.
So yeah, weird to hear that.
I'm a comics writer too, and that's weird for me because
you are.
Yeah, I mean, we're writing comics and we're making comics. That makes us comics creators. And I think a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not really a creator. If you make comics, you're a comics creator. So don't make the mistake I made in not considering myself a comics creator. You're a comics creator if you make comics. Doesn't matter if it's stapled together, you know, on a fanzine. You've made comics, you're a comics creator. Now, we're not, you know, Stan Lee working for Marvel or, you know, George Perez working for DC or whatever.
Right.
But they make comics, we make comics. So,
same thing.
Don't let yourself put yourself down because you are a comics creator. So you're a comics creator.
My artist in the episode that I did with him, with Mike, he brought it up. He's like, you have to get good at marketing yourself, right? You have to, mm-hmm. And that goes right into that, you know, and everybody can do a better job of that. So on that note, do you go to conventions? Do you do the convention scene at all?
I used to do a bit more. Heroes Con in Charlotte I've done it a few times, but I did it in 2019. COVID
I'm 3 hours from Charlotte, so.
Oh, okay.
I'm in Eastern North Carolina right now.
I love Heroes Con because it is all about comics.
I need
comics.
To go next. I'm going to go. I may not go as a, like, yeah. I don't know, but I'll be there in person next year.
It's 17 hours for me. It's a little bit of a drive. Yep.
Where is Fayetteville, Arkansas?
Northwest Arkansas. So I'm close to
West Fort Smith.
Above Fort Smith.
Okay, I knew it.
Yeah.
So my brother lives in Oklahoma City. I have a brother and sister that live in Oklahoma City. So I travel I-40. I lived a mile off I-40 in North Carolina. He lives a mile off I-40 in Oklahoma. There's just, you know, 1,200 miles between us.
So for the day job, today I was in Tulsa.
Okay.
So I drove to Tulsa and came back today, but I also go to Oklahoma City pretty regularly, like once or twice a month. So
do you do any conventions out there?
I haven't yet. I need to start getting back into the convention scene. COVID kind of,
I think you were about to say COVID kind of, it's the same thing for me.
Kind of, yeah.
Knocked the sale out of that whole thing for me for a couple
years. And I'm
starting back 2026.
All right. Awesome.
So on that note, if you find one in the Oklahoma area, let me know because I'll be out there in a heartbeat. I don't care because I get to see my brother and my sisters.
I have to apologize because when you drive I-40, you have to drive the worst stretch of interstate in the entire world. And that's between Memphis and Little Rock.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
I hate that.
It's pretty bad.
I hate it so bad.
So there's another way you can go. So we've actually gone up through left North Carolina. You go up to 77 or something up through West Virginia and then like Kentucky and Missouri. And
hit St. Louis and then kind of.
Yeah, hit St. Louis and then down to, you know, Oklahoma. We went out there last year or this year, actually earlier this year. We went out that way and then we came home I-40, but you know, it is what it is. I don't mind. I love driving, so I'll be out there in a heartbeat. So let me know if you have a convention. I'll be there.
Gotcha.
I gotta sell this comic book that I'm a creator of.
Yeah, exactly.
And collect email addresses.
Exactly. Connect those email addresses.
All right. So here's the fun question. You already answered the first one, but who's your favorite superhero?
Quasar, Wendell Vaughn, Marvel Comics. And I love Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, too. So.
Yep. Makes sense. Do you read the Absolute Green Lantern?
I've been reading it. I have a lot of faith in Al Ewing as a writer, but it's been a very slow.
So much better. It's slow, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Green Lantern has just been so slow that I'm starting to get a little bit frustrated with it. Batman, I have not read yet, and I've got some of the issues, and I've not read Absolute Wonder Woman, which I've heard is amazing.
I've read the first nine. I've got 10, 11, 12 sitting on my desk. I haven't read yet, but it's on my list. I've heard they're good.
I've got the first, I think I've got the first cup for the 3 and 4 maybe of Absolute Superman. I want to get into it too. I just need to find those first couple of issues.
The first two.
I should not have a problem because they've reprinted them like 18 billion times at this point.
It's so popular, but they're good. I haven't read the Superman. I read the first five of the Flash and Green Lantern, and I haven't read any more of those. I'm continually reading the Batman and the Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman. Gotcha.
I'm trying to read one a day, so I'm reading a lot. I pull like 15 books a week, so that's crazy. Yeah.
You're going to have to jump up to two a day.
Man, yeah. Well, I normally do like, I'll read like three or four and then for like 3 or 4 days, and then I don't read for a couple days, and then 3 or 4 a day. It's crazy. So do you remember the first comic book you ever read?
I probably not, but the first memory of the comic I have is, I think it's Green Lantern 112 or 113. And he's falling out of a plane and his ring's off and Green Arrow's up at the top of the plane.
You said you still have it.
I think I still have it somewhere.
That's awesome. That would be amazing. What is your favorite current series?
That is a really good question. If you're going to, let's divide that into indie and let's divide that into like Marvel DC, right? So. I'm a huge Green Lantern fan. I am enjoying the Green Lantern books immensely that are coming out now. So I'll probably have to say, let me think a second. What have I got in my list here? Probably Green Lantern. I grew up an 80s Marvel kid, but I think Green Lantern is probably the book that I'm enjoying most right now. From Marvel DC side. On the indie side, that's a tough one too. There's so many great indie books out there.
There is. It's cute. Oh.
You have White Ash by Charlie Stickney and Connor Hughes. You have Pat Shan's books, the Cheeky comic series, all of those. Those are great. You've got Kat and Phil doing their Ever Afterverse stuff with, The Beast and Snow, and those are great books. Good friend of mine, MK Palmer, she does a book called Meraki, which is great. Beautiful covers, beautiful art. But probably I got to go with my buddy Kevin. I love Tart. By Kevin Joseph and Ludovic Sale. Ludo's a French artist as well. She's a time traveling demon hunter, and Kevin has done some interesting things about how he's planted things with time travel and how it works in the book. And it's a book that I really, really like to see come out. And I'm just a cheerleader for him in that book. And it has nothing to do with the fact that we're crossing over probably early next year.
No, not at all. Nothing about that.
But no, I really do love Tart. And I'm sure I'm missing some. Rob Moltari does a book called Night Wolf, which is a lot of fun. He's a great creator. Actually, another guy that lives, Clay Adams, he actually lives here in Northwest Arkansas. He does a lot of anthologies like Nightmare Theater, which is good. I'm not a huge horror fan, but Clay's an awesome guy. And
I'm not either, but I read that H.P. Lovecraft. It's kind of horror. There was also The Twilight Zone came out with a book last month or last week.
Really?
That was really good, too. Yeah, I have it here. Hold on. It was really good. So it's just I think there's there's going to be a few of them, but they're one shots. That one was really good. It was everything I remember from The Twilight Zone, like reading the book. It was really cool. Mm-hmm. So, because I loved the show when I was a kid.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, if you could live in any comic book universe, which one would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one.
I don't ask the easy question. No, I'm just kidding. It's a hard-hitting podcast, right?
Because, I mean, I have a strong kinship to the Marvel universe of the 80s, right?
Right.
I joke with a lot of people that the reason I wear glasses is because I pored over all of the pages, every page of the official handbooks of the Marvel universe when I was a kid. I mean, I almost memorized them. I think I read them so many times. So I don't know that I would want to live in the Marvel universe.
Right.
I don't know. That's DC universe would be interesting, but which version of it, right? Are we talking Earth 1, Earth 39? I mean,
right.
Which multiverse are we in?
Right.
I don't know. Let's go with the Marvel universe for now.
All right.
80s. I'm just such an 80 Marvels guy.
And there's not much happening in the Marvel universe in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So
yeah, exactly. You know. I would be safe. There's no, everything's happening in New York or California.
Right.
Or Wakanda.
Yeah. Or Wakanda. And well, if you read the Deadpool Wolverine, they do a little stuff in South Dakota. It's like, wait a minute, stay out of the Midwest.
Exactly.
If you could have any superpower, this is, you know, everybody has to answer that question, right?
Yeah. So my two favorite characters, they use their willpower on, you know, quantum bands or power rings. That would be totally my jam.
I'm down with the power ring. I'm down with that. All right. This could be any character, main character, side character, sidekick, whatever. But if you could have any comic book character as your sidekick, who would it be?
As my sidekick? Uh-oh. Yep. What kind of crap am I getting into?
Right. Well, if you're in the Marvel universe, it might be a lot.
Probably something, yeah. That would be interesting. I think there are characters that would be interesting. I mean, I would love to hang out with Quasar or with Hal Jordan. I mean,
right.
I think that would be cool because both characters are so well drawn out. I mean, I know who those, you know, I know those guys, right? Because I've read so many books by them. I think it would have to be one or two of those guys. So,
all right. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be?
Give me a sec.
Yeah, no problem. Take your time.
Okay, I got it. They gave him a PhD for what?
To write comics? I love that. That's perfect. So one of the cool things, and I need to find a way to show you, you know, at some point. One of the cool things I'm doing in my comic book is, actually, I can probably pull it up on my phone, is I am, it's going to be kind of like a homage to the indie community. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if I want to show that, actually.
Okay.
But not that one. But I need to go back to find page one. Hold on. I think I can actually just Nope, it doesn't work that way. So part of my story is set in a comic shop, right? And but what's in the comic book store are comic books, right? So if you're in a comic book setting, you have a wall full of comic books,
yeah,
right? But yeah. In like, I don't want just generic comic books on there, right? Like just generic pictures of comics or made up. What I thought would be really cool is like people that I interview, if they're willing, is to put like one of their covers on the shelf inside my comic book store, inside my comic.
Cool. Very cool.
Would you be willing to, for me to use one of your images for that?
I don't see why not. Sure.
I'll send you an email about it or something just to like confirm it, but, and I'll show you like what I'll send you an actual like picture of what I'm thinking. Okay. But that's something like I'm starting to, once I got that idea, and you've been asking people I've interviewed, but then going back to the other people I've interviewed and asking them, and most everybody's really cool with it. Like they're like, I don't think anybody said no. Yeah. just because we thought it would be cool and the artist thought it would be really cool too. So he's going to put like his comics in there, right? Like I'm
awesome. Yep.
the owner of the shop, you know, owner's based off me, right? And so I'm reading one of his comics in one of the panels, you know. Nice. So that's kind of cool. Actually, I can show you that on the Kickstarter if I can pull it up real quick.
Email me your Kickstarter link too.
All right, I'll do that. I gotta figure out how to get to it on my computer. I gotta go to Instagram. It's in my link tree. I need to come up. I just need to. I've used MailChimp 100 times. I just need to build an Instagram MailChimp to collect email addresses.
Yep, absolutely. And they make a subscription. You can do a subscription page and then use something like Bitly to create a short link for it, and then right. You know, have a short link or a QR code that you can, you know, hand out or give to people or whatever. It makes it easy. And then on that page, if they sign up, oh, cool.
So this is my book. These are like the covers I've done. But like, so there's the comic book shop. I'm reading one of his comics. It's hard to see.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can zoom in there, but I don't know how to zoom in. Well, you get the idea. But there's going to be like a comic wall, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually. I think that's all the art that you can see at the moment. But there's going to be like a wall of comics, you know, but on that thing, I want to, you know, as many people as let me, I want to use their comics just to like showcase their work too, you know?
Yep. Cool. Very cool.
But I'll email you my, well, when I release the episode, so I'm going to release this on the 13th. So early next week. That morning, I'll send you an email with my link tree and a link to the YouTube. Thumbnails, all that stuff. So yeah, I can cut some of this part out, but one thing to wrap it up and then we'll stop recording. Go to the Kickstarter, buy your book, right?
Thank
Back
you.
Your
yes,
book.
Please.
Crossover Division, links in the show notes or description. We'll have links in there. Thank you for joining me. This has been awesome. They
Thanks
always go way
on.
Longer than I anticipate. but it's amazing. Hopefully people listen, but you know, I have so much fun with these, and you know, we go an hour and a half, hour, 45 minutes. It's like, it feels like that, you know,
it's fun to talk comics.
It really is. And I hope, you know, I hope you enjoyed yourself and I hope you get something out of it. And when you do your next one, let's do this again when you launch your next Kickstarter. So
absolutely.
I really appreciate it. All right.
In a world of heroes, villains, and epic stories,
Braha, Anakon, and their ultimate sidekick, Panel P, take you on adventures each week.
Showing off their comic book hauls,
fun trivia and games, honest reviews,
and inspiring conversations with creators and consumers who make it all possible.
Join in on the conversation.
This is Talking Comics.
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, We're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.